This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Wesley Davis. Wesley is Chief Ag Economist, Meridian Agribusiness Advisors. First off, Travis Averill with USDA's National Ag Statistics Service on breakevens.
U.S. prices received by farmers for hogs and corn. The chart provides the prices for the last 10 years. The hog prices are blue, corn prices are red. The most current prices are for October. The November prices will be released next week on December 31st. To the right of the chart are the hogs and corn prices for the last 6 months, along with the ratios. As you can see, the six-month ratios have ranged from 14.74 in May to as high as 20.15 in August. Historically, the break-even is 15, so the last 6 months have actually looked pretty good if you're using that as a comparison.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today we're joined by Wesley Davis. Wesley is Chief Ag Economist at Meridian Agribusiness Advisors. Hey, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Tony. I really appreciate you having us.
Okay, first, let's start with Meridian Agribusiness Advisors. Who are you? Where are you located? What do you do?
Yeah, so Meridian Agribusiness Advisors, we're a team of agricultural economists and agriculture experts, and we think of ourselves as the research consultancy for agribusiness leaders, analysts, and investors. And so when we see the market, there's a ton of noise, there's a ton of things going on. We like to think that our value is being able to disseminate that down into what really matters and what does it mean for different businesses in the agriculture economy. All of us come from farming or agricultural backgrounds too, so it's in our hearts. I grew up on a farm myself, and we're all very passionate and excited to serve the industry in that way.
Well, you stole it. I was going to ask you if you're an expert here, did it actually start on a farm? So a little of your background and how you ended up where you are today.
Yeah, so I grew up on an egg farm. So we had a chicken egg operation that supplied homes, schools, and restaurants across West Virginia. And then also, you know, got to mess around on my uncle's row crop and beef cattle farm growing up as well. Was involved in FFA as a state and national officer, and then went to Purdue and studied quantitative ag economics. Got my bachelor's and master's and have been in the industry as an ag economist for about 10 years now.
Okay, so this is perfect for us to work into this. At the very end of 2025, USDA finally made the announcement on details in the FBA, the Farmer Bridge Assistance Program. There's another acronym we need from USDA, but this Farmer Bridge Assistance Program, what's the elevator speech for what that is?
Yeah, so I mean, if you look at the release from the USDA, they framed it as an economic relief payment. So they looked at what the cost of production was, what the prices were in the market, and made an estimate. Now, when we look at the numbers, it's about 5 to 20% of total revenue it'll comprise over this crop year for most of the major row crops. And so it's really framed as a way to help farmers bridge the high input costs that we're seeing and significant pain points that we're seeing people getting product out to the elevators and sold and marketed this year.
So let's look at some of the rates here. And when we start looking at rates, rice is at the very top of the list, the most money per acre. Cotton is number two. How did they get to these numbers?
Yeah, so I think if you look at it across the different crops, I mean, agriculture is not homogenous. So there have been different impacts and different pricing levels over the past few years. I mean, we all know cotton has not been doing very well the past few years. Rice has also had a headwind because of the trade environment and some of the softness in consumer level spending as well. And so I think there was the quantitative approach that many of us looked at, and you know, the folks at FarmDoc were able to do some of the estimates and got pretty close to some of those numbers. But then I think there was some qualitative adjustments to it too. Like we always want to see with, you know, we don't always just want to take the data approach here. It also needs to take into reality the conditions farmers are facing too.
We're talking with Wesley Davis, Chief Ag Economist with Meridian Agribusiness Advisors. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest, Wesley Davis, Chief Ag Economist at Meridian Agribusiness Advisors. All right, we're talking about the Farmer Bridge Assistance Program. I guess one of the questions here, what will they do with the money?
I do think that when you look at what farmers are facing today, it does help to alleviate some of the working capital needs that they have during this part of the season. And I think the timing, it's a little late for things like seed spending and fertilizer spending, because a lot of those decisions have already been made for the year. But there is an open window for the diverse farms that are buying things throughout the year, the, you know, folks that also will need to buy agrochems throughout the growing season as well. There might be some opportunity to, you know, alleviate some of the working capital needs there.
Okay. I think you've opened a door, so I'm going to come on through it at this point.
Let's do it.
That money that is set to flow out, and that will happen in February. Mm-hmm. How is that going to be utilized by producers? And I think obviously it will depend maybe upon regional differences and crop differences, but what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, I mean, the researchers at Purdue's Center for Commercial Agriculture were ahead of the game here. They asked it in two of their barometer surveys. Both times, almost 50% of farmers said, I'm going to use this to pay down debt. I'm going to get that debt off of my books and make it a little bit easier for me to manage the needs of my operation and, you know, take that heavy bag off of my back. The second use that they said was to build working capital. It was about another 20-25% of farmers. So they want to be able to replenish things like their rainy day funds. The rest of the longer tail of things they said they would use are things like potentially investing in, you know, machinery that, at this point in the cycle, we do have some farmers that bought early and, you know, the 16-17 range and might actually just need to buy new things or want to take advantage of the tax credits that increased this year for equipment depreciation. So that's kind of where they're saying that they'll use it. They're not saying that they'll use it to go out and buy new equipment, to pay for family expenses necessarily, or to buy new land. They're saying they want to use it to insulate themselves and feel more comfortable about the money in their bank accounts and what they have to pay out at the end of the year to the bank.
We've already heard some concern from at least one commodity group saying this will not make our farmers whole. Is it intended to do that?
Look, I mean, I think that the program is helpful to certain farmers, especially the 20 to 30% of them for corn and soybeans this year that are going to be in the red. We have farmers that are just not going to make money this year, even with those payments. There's a group of them that are going to benefit from, you know, the relief that this is going to offer. But those producers are still going to be hurting because the prices have declined and the input prices relative to their price received is depressed. I do think there's been whispers from tons of groups in Washington and reports as well that there could be another set of payments coming out. I think the administration didn't really focus on framing this as a trade remedy. And if you look at the program back in 2019 and 2020, or 2018 and 19, that program really focused on figuring out what would the price have been if we did not have a trade war? What is the price that farmers received and really making them whole for that? Versus here, it really does seem that they said, all right, what's the P&L look like for this farm? And what do we need to do for the median producer to help them get by?
Yeah, in many instances, I know there are, again, exceptions to the rule here. But many producers are going back into the bank and using this as just a way to kind of put things together, cobble it all together to have another chance at this. For many producers, though, the indicators have been, you know, another tough year coming, another year, another tough year coming. When you step back and look at those indicators, what are you seeing?
Yeah, so I think there are two big things on my mind for the indicators. The first one is that if you look at the prices paid versus the prices received for crop farmers, we're still inverted. So those prices paid levels for all of the different inputs have not come down at the same pace and value that crop prices have. That's typical for this part of the cycle, but it is much more drastic than it was in our last downturn in 14 to 16. So that is something that is catching my attention. The second indicator that I've been looking at a lot, and Clarity by Ag Access and I have been working on a survey of about 800 commercial farmers in the U.S. to see, well, how are they going to adjust their input spending and their decisions this year? The things that they're saying are they will focus more on generics for agrochemicals. They will talk to their landowners again to see if they can adjust cash rent or the timing of those payments. For livestock, things are great. So they're looking at, you know, building new facilities, investing in growing their herds, the things that we would expect for them as they are in the upturn. But the crop producers, we're really seeing that farmers are being very diligent, and then they're asking of their input producers, how can I adjust the products that I'm using so that I'm still getting the same ROI and effectiveness on the acre, but also managing the total cost of my production and the per bushel cost of what I'm putting out into the market.
We're talking with Wesley Davis, Meridian Agribusiness Advisors. It's the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members, our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Wesley Davis, Chief Ag Economist with Meridian Agribusiness Advisors, talking about the situation in ag right now. Is there a light at the end of the tunnel?
It's a good question. I mean, I'm a farm kid, so I'm eternally optimistic about it turning back, and it always does. It's just a question of when. I think a couple of the things that could catalyze that, we all talk about the renewable fuel standards and what that could potentially mean. I think the other potential catalyst is some of the livestock rebuilding that we've been doing. There are some indicators that beef producers are potentially starting to rebuild those herds. And so if we have that, it's going to expand our feed mill or our feed use for some of the crops. I also think, you know, we will get through the election this year. And I think at the end of that, a lot of the farm groups and folks in the farm community will be looking for a new farm bill to come down and to be part of permanent legislation. I think once we get past the ad hoc approach to the farm bill and more to a stable program like what we've seen in years past that really takes into reality the type of cost environment and risks that producers have from geopolitics and consumer demand, I think we'll really start to see things turn back again.
Well, I guess we have to throw out that saying, well, it'll take an act of Congress, because if a farm bill's any idea, that's probably not a good way to play it. Hey, if we want to keep up with what's happening with Meridian Agribusiness Advisors, learn more about you, where do we find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn. You can also find us at Meridian Ag AG Advisors, advisors with an S.com. And we'll be releasing our research products starting in May. So if that's of interest to you, you can see this type of analysis and things on pages and not just verbally.
Wesley Davis, Chief Ag Economist, Meridian Agribusiness Advisors. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
What were some of the top weather stories of 2025? According to USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey, severe weather was rampant in the first half of the year.
There were at least a dozen billion-dollar severe weather outbreaks in 2025 that resulted cumulatively in more than $40 billion of damages. We saw at least 300 tornadoes apiece in March, April, and May, more than 250 tornadoes in June. And by the time we got through June, we had seen 24 fatal tornadoes across the United States, leading to 68 deaths.
Meanwhile, the Christmas period of above normal temperatures was the final piece of what is expected to be one of the warmest years on record.
Overarching warmth has been the real theme for 2025.
Thanksgiving week, however, featured a winter blitz and cold snap.
It included the snowiest November day in Chicago's history. If you look at the first half of December, temperatures were broadly at least 10 degrees below normal at just about every major Midwestern city.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.